Hello, hello everybody. Good morning, I would say. It's 10:30, but it's still morning. I hope you enjoyed the past days at Build, and I hope you're going to enjoy your last day and hours here as well. And I'm here to help you or to teach you how to design an app for Windows 8 if you have experience designing for iOS or for iPad in particular. So this is the agenda for the next hour. So I'm going to introduce myself first. I'm going to teach you the core design principles of Windows 8. And finally, I'm going to dive into the iPad to Windows Store app case study. And at last, I'm going to teach you how to create a unique, compelling Windows 8 application. But first things first, who am I? I'm Bart Kleiss. I'm a creative director of an agency called Ratio Interactive. And the agency is based out of Seattle. And the next slide should show that. So this is the storefront of our office. It's actually upstairs. It's not like the glass studio there. So we are a 50-people agency, and we build not only Windows 8 apps, but also Android apps and iOS apps. We actually also built a WebOS app a time ago as well, but as you all know, that didn't really go anywhere. So we have quite some apps under our belt. I believe we built between 30 and 40 Windows 8 apps in the past year and a half. We started building and designing apps before the official launch on the 26th of October last year. And this is a little piece of our portfolio. We've done a lot of magazine apps. You can see Parents Magazine, Vanity Fair, Glamour, Lucky, Wired. They're all based on the same core app. We've done a couple of cooking apps, like iCookbook, as you can see there, all recipes video as well, and a couple of apps for NASDAQ and ICSA, for example, which are apps for board of directors. We also do apps for like smaller startups, Nature Space, the icon on the bottom left is a company out of Chicago, a two-people company that also came to Ratio to build their app. So it started kind of like a year and a half ago, and Microsoft invited me to their campus to reimagine an app called iCookbook. And this app existed on the iOS store for quite some time already. And like I told you before, this app exists on Android platform, on WebOS, and also on the smaller version on the iPhone, for example. So we've built and designed this app cross-platform, and then Microsoft said, like, hey, why don't you come on here and redo the app, but for Windows 8. But at that time, there was no documentation. There were a couple of internal apps that Microsoft built, so I had to base myself purely on what I saw on the platform. And next. All right. So what I'm going to show you now is an iterative process of how we came to the final design. So this is the first screen you see. That's a very initial screen that I designed the first hours. And this is not a good example. But what I want to teach you is how, what I want to show you is the mistakes I made, so you don't have to make those mistakes. So this is my cookbook for Windows 8, and at least the first iteration of the design. The background, you see a sandwich. At left, you see some navigation, and then you see six tiles on top of the background image. Now, in order to be able to evaluate this design, we need to understand the core design principles. So I'm going to guide you through those design principles. We have three core design principles. The first one is content before Chrome. And content is everything around your, Chrome is everything around your content that helps you navigate the app, but it's not content. So if you look at this screen, for example, you have a status bar, we have a search field, we have buttons, a tab bar. That's not content. It helps you navigate through the app. But in another way, it kind of distracts you as well. So the Windows 8 design language describes that you should put content forward and as much as you can hide the controls. They're going to be easy to find. Users know after a while where to find the controls, but the first experience of your app, if you open it, should be all around your content, and all the Chrome should be hidden as much as possible. So let's look at iCookbook for Windows 8, and you can immediately see that all the Chrome is gone. So you don't have any menu bar at the top, you don't have any battery indicator, you don't have any wireless indicator, you don't have a menu bar at the bottom, no search fields, it's all gone. It's purely content. It's your pictures or your photos or your articles, whatever your app is about, that should be forefront in your Windows 8 app. Now the second design principle that you have to understand is fast and fluid. And you can interpret that in different ways. The way I interpret that is that Windows 8 is known for their large panoramic views. So you open an app, and the first view you see is pretty long. You only see a little part on your screen, but you can easily swipe, and using gestures, you can easily go to other parts of your homepage. Now, the benefit of that is that you don't have to make any decisions as a user. You just open the app, sit back, relax, and you just see what's available. And you see little bits and pieces of the different categories that your app has. And that's a pretty fast experience. So you open the app, you just can scroll, see what you're interested in, and then tap and dive in. The third and last design principle is authentically digital. So if you look at the iOS 6 app, the calendar, you see in the top and the bottom, you see references to tangible objects, to a, in this case, an agenda that I personally don't know anymore in print version, but I remember that my dad used to have one. So that, we call it skeuomorphic design. iOS 6 is known for that. iOS 7 derives from that. They embrace flat design, but you still see some apps, for example, the Notes app in iOS 7 still has that texture in the background, still has that reference to like actual paper. Now, Microsoft believes in authentically digital, so no references to those tangible objects. I mean, people are used to use digital calendars on their computers. Not many people have like an actual calculator anymore. We all understand that those things are available digitally, so why should we refer to the actual devices and the actual objects? So if you look at left, it's the same calendar in a way. The only thing you see is gray backgrounds, some white lines, large copy there at Friday. That's it. It's very simple. It's just purely your content. In this case, there's nothing in an agenda, so it's pretty empty. But there's nothing to distract you from your content. Now, let's compare iCookbook for Windows 8 at the left with iCookbook for iPad. And you can immediately see that the right screen has a lot of skeuomorphic design. You have a wood texture, probably refers to your kitchen environment. You have a handwritten font, probably refers to your grandma writing some handwritten notes for you, some recipes. We have some paper there, we have corkboard as well. It's an interesting design, but we're past that stage. I think we don't need all those references anymore. We can just purely give emphasis to the content and just get rid of all those distracting elements. So as you see, the only thing you have here on the screen are large, thin fonts, no handwritten font anymore. You see crisp edges, simple shapes, solid background colors. These are kind of the elements that you would use for a Windows 8 design. Now let's go back to the first design that I showed you, and let's evaluate how this one scores against those design principles. The first one, content before Chrome. What do you guys think? No, I see a lot of people nodding no. Correct. I didn't understand it at the time. You can clearly see this one piece of content. It's a background image, it's a sandwich, but it's a background image. It's not actionable. I cannot tap into it and I cannot go to that recipe. So the only content I have here is actually not content. For the rest, I see a lot of copy, I see a lot of tiles, but ingredient by itself, the word by itself, it's not content, it's just a word ingredient. The same for brand or occasion. The tiles that let you dive into a specific category don't show any content either. So I didn't get that from the bat. Fast and fluid. What do you guys think? Did I do that well? Did I understand that? I don't think I did that well. So what I tried to do, I tried to stuff everything on that one viewport. You know the typical debate in web design, above the fold, under the fold? You kind of have the same story here. So I was kind of, I didn't really embrace or didn't really understand that panoramic view that you can easily scroll to. So I tried to stuff everything on that one page. So it didn't do that really well. Authentically digital. What do you guys think? Did I do that well? I think I did. At least one of the three core design principles I understood in the first hours. So you see all the references to the handwritten font, the textures are all gone. So let's have a look at the second iteration of the design and see how I solved a couple of things. So you immediately see I see more photos of recipes there. I don't really have the navigation anymore at the left. I still have those large buttons at the bottom. You see the see more buttons at the bottom here, which is Chrome. And again, you don't have to have them there. But I as a designer thought I need to have them because otherwise, how can people dive into those categories? Where are they gonna click on? Where are the buttons? Me as a designer, I was trained to place buttons all over your screen. But we don't need that because I didn't understand that you could tap and click on those hub titles. So recent, cuisine, theme, these are all hubs. And those titles at the top are actionable. You click on them and you can go to the next category. But as a designer, you're a little bit afraid, like tapping on titles? That's a lot. Therefore, and later in the presentation, I'll show you that you can have little indicators next to those titles to lure people in. So for example, recent, you can have a number next to it, let's say 100, and you know there are 100 recent items, so you know it's actionable and there's more content than you see on the page. Third iteration, I got rid of those buttons and I surfaced some titles alongside the images. So it's getting better. It's still a little kind of grayish. So in the last iteration, I used some red that I'd drawn from the logo. So the logo is a little tomato here in the logo. So I've drawn a red from it. I made it a little bit warmer and added a background picture to give some kind of atmosphere. And here we are with the final design of Fiku Book. And you see here at the top next to the different hubs, you see the number of recipes here. And that gives some context to users that there's more than you see on this page and invites them to click through. So this is the Asian cuisine. So you tap that cuisine on the homepage and you go into this collection view. Very simple view. You see some images there, no borders, no shadows. The only kind of unique design factor here is the little slanted edge that you have at the bottom of that tile. So if you go back to homepage, you see that here as well. So it's by using those small, subtle design elements that you can create a unique look and feel for your app and still staying true to the core design principles. Let's have a look at the detail page. So once you select a recipe, you land on this page. It starts with a large image, and then you have a large panorama at the right edge of your screen. And the large panorama has the cooking steps, the ingredients, notes. It's all on that page. You don't have to make decisions and tap the buttons to get there. You just swipe and see what you need while you're cooking. So that lends us to the actual case study that I wrote for Microsoft a while ago. And this case study is available online. So you can go to windowsstore.com/designers, and you can click on Design Case Studies iPad to Windows Store app, and you can find this case study. I obviously updated the case study to incorporate the changes in Windows 8.1. So in order to build that case study, I designed an app as well as for iOS, for iPad, as for Windows 8. So as you can see here in the background, you see the Windows 8 app, and on the foreground, you see the iPad app. And the app is a photo app. It's a very simple concept. Everybody knows a photo app. It pulls in your photos from, for example, SkyDrive, and it organizes those photos by month. So that's the concept of the app that we're going to work with in the next 30 minutes. So we're going to cover a lot of topics here. So I'm going to explain you how the homepage should be laid out. What is a silhouette and grid, semantic zoom, app bars, share, search, settings, selecting items, screen orientation, multitasking, app tiles, and notifications. So a lot to cover. Let's start with the homepage. The homepage is fundamentally different from an iPad homepage in that sense that you have the hubs. And I already explained the hubs a little bit. And here you have two hubs. You have the foo hub and the bar hub. Instead of having a menu bar with buttons that only give you a piece of copy, a little title and a symbol, on Windows 8, you have content to explain to the user what you can find in a category. So rather than symbolizing where you can go to, you just show them already what's in that category. So you tease them with a little bit of content. I don't know where I have to point the pointer. There you go. OK, it's on the tablet. So this is the iPad app for this photo journal app. You can see in the background, you have the homepage, which shows 12 tiles, because there are 12 months in a year. And at the right, you see the comments page. And in order to toggle between the two views, you have to use the menu bar here and tap on these buttons. So against these buttons, they're just a little icon and a little title. It doesn't really give away what you will find in that page. Now, and this is for an exercise, I'm going to show you how to not really design a Windows 8 app, but how to get to a Windows 8 app in terms of design by cutting away elements from the iPad app. So let's take our knife and let's start cutting away unnecessary items. The first thing, and it's a little bit harder to see on screen, you have this kind of texture in the background, texture that again refers to the physical photo album that you might still remember or might still have. So we're going to get rid of that, and we're going to replace that texture with a solid color that is drawn from the texture. So I don't know if you can see it. It's a little, you can probably not see it, but it's gone, I promise you. Now let's get rid of all the Chrome. So I explained on iOS, there's a lot of Chrome. You see all those bars at the top, search, you see the menu bar. Let's get rid of all that. And you immediately see that your content gets more room to breathe. Now let's get rid of the pagination metaphor. So in the bottom, let's get rid of that one. And let's also get rid of the stacking metaphor. So every month, every thumbnail you see here resembles a month. And within that month, you have multiple photos. And the way that iOS solves that to explain to users that there's more content available is by using the stacking metaphor. But let's get rid of that. We don't need that. Now, you still see the white frame around the photos. Probably refers to, let's say, Polaroid picture. Again, we don't need that. It kind of distracts, so let's cut it away. And now let's reorganize this page into a panoramic view. So we have 12 thumbnails there. Four are going to be left, and the other 8 are going to be flown out of the screen, as you can see here. So what happens now is, like you see, you have a lot of white space suddenly. A lot of white space that you can use to give more emphasis to your content. So that's what we're going to do as well. We're going to take those images, and we're going to blow them up. Now, we only see images. You can probably kind of guess what it is about, but those images are part of an album. Albums have a title, so let's add a title underneath those images. And we still have a lot of space left at the bottom there. So let's pull even more content from each month and push that forward on the homepage. Bam. So we're almost there. So just by reducing some Chrome elements and increasing sizes of your content, we're almost there with our Windows 8 design. Now let's increase the size of those titles. Those titles are, it's kind of those, I don't know if you know, the demo effect, the kind of printer that prints those letters that you can stick anywhere. That's kind of what it refers to. Let's swap that out with some nice, small, or I see a thin and crisp fonts. Now remember on the first screens on the iPad, we had a comments category. And the comments category is gone, and there's no way to access that. So let's get the comments back, and let's add them to the front. So again, instead of those two buttons that we have on iPad to go to your 12 months or to go to your comments, here you just tap on those titles here, and you already see a little bit of content from within those comments. Now, only a few fixes left, so let's fix the logo at the top. And the last change is just let's swap out the tablet and we have our Windows 8 design. So you see, it's very, very easy actually to design an app. You just remove unnecessary Chrome and you focus on your content and you draw more content from those categories and you leverage them or you surface them on the homepage. So this is the panorama. So there's a lot of months that you can see at the right of the screen. So we have November 2011, October, and it goes all the way to the first day I took a picture. So there's a lot of scrolling going on. That has a little disadvantage. If I want to go, let's say, to June 2010, if I scroll too fast, I'm going to scroll past that month. So there are ways to solve that, and the way to solve that is with Semantic Zoom. But first, I'll show you how to lay out the homepage and how to use the grid that Microsoft suggests. So this is called the silhouette. So you can clearly see the top, the bottom, and the left of your page. You see large paddings. And they intentionally did introduce those large paddings to show the users that your content is cut off at the right and that you can swipe to the right to find more. They have this concept around units. Every unit is 20 pixels, so they advise 140 pixels from the top, 120 pixels from the left. This is a grid that they suggest. You can use that, you should use that. But if you have more time and if you want to make a more unique design, you can come up with your own grid. So you don't have to respect this, but by default it comes for free out of the box, and all the templates have this, this silhouette and this grid by default. So some other rules between the hubs. You have 80 pixels or 4 units. If your hubs are related, you have 40, and between content, you have 10 pixels. So again, you don't have to use this grid. There are other grids. For example, the Foursquare app uses a totally different grid. It's a 96 by 96 unit grid. So one of the squares is 96 pixels, and you see that all the elements on this page, see this rating, for example, the title here, is all falls back into that grid. Now, one unique thing about the Foursquare app is that left, you don't have the padding anymore at the top and the bottom either. And that's because of the left of the screen where you see me and my girlfriend and the map. There's actually a map at the left. So you open the app, and you actually land somewhere in the middle of your panorama. So you don't land in the beginning of your panorama. So you can start scrolling to the left, you can see a map, and if you scroll to the right, you see the different venues nearby you. Those two views are the same. So if you scroll to the right and you see the trending items here, for example, these items are the same that you can find on the map at left. So you can be creative and you can come up with your own concepts within the guidelines. So this breaks the grid and the silhouette, but that's totally fine as long as you have another grid and you're consistent in applying that grid. So as you can see here, the spacing between the hubs are 96 pixels as well. Let's talk a little bit about semantic zoom. I already explained to you that a large panorama has a disadvantage of navigating within that page because it's so long. Now, the way we're going to do that, we're going to solve that, is by using semantic zoom. And you enable that by pinching on the screen, and you get another screen, which is actually the same one as you just saw, but it's simplified. So a lot of pieces of content are gone now, and you don't see any pictures anymore, but it's a reduced view of your homepage. So in this case, I can easily go to June 2010, tab that, and that will bring me in the panoramic view exactly where that content is. You don't always have to have semantic zoom. If your panorama is really short, you probably shouldn't have it. But if you, for example, have a list that's alphabetically ordered, then it's a good idea to have semantic zoom, because it's going to be really hard for your users to guess where R starts and then have to do swipe, stop. It's going to be really hard, so then you semantic zoom, tap on R, for example, and you jump in that section in your page. So again, you don't always have to use that. Just use common sense when user could benefit from it. But if not necessary, you don't have to have semantic zoom. You can have semantic zoom on any page. It doesn't only have to exist on the home page. It can exist on any other pages as well. So on iOS, the way to solve that is by using the top menu bar and have a drop down there where you can toggle between different views. It's a little bit less handy. To be honest, in iOS 7, if you look at the photo album app, there is some kind of concept of semantic zoom there as well. So I don't know if you have a chance to play with that yet, but they seem to like the gestures to zoom in and zoom out of your content as well. Let's talk a little bit about app bars. So actions or commands on Windows 8 go into an app bar that's located at the bottom of your screen. On iOS, there's no real rule around that. You can put them in the top menu bar, you can put them in the bottom menu bar. You can kind of do whatever you want. On Windows 8, it's a little bit more strict, and they would like you to put all those commands in the bottom app bar. So the bottom app bar, you activate that by swiping from the bottom. The app bar opens. And in this case, on the home page of my photo app, I have one action here. And the command is upload. There's nothing more that I can do on the home page than uploading a photo. So that's why you only have one command there. Now, let's look at a detail page. So just imagine that I navigated to Barcelona and tapped on one picture. So now when a detail page, one picture, I open the app bar again, and now I have more controls there. So I have controls that are applicable for this page. So these ones, the local commands, are commands that you can execute against this page. For example, rotate, delete, add a comment. And at the right, you have a global control there. And that control will come back on every other page. So you help the user, you help communicating with the user that whatever you can do on this page and the left side of the screen, whatever you can do on any page, you can find on the right. For example, in the Foursquare app, the check-in would be at your right. So wherever you are in the app, you can click and check in. Now, if we zoom out a little bit and we look at the full app, then you see there's also a top app bar. You don't have to have a top app bar. You don't have to have a bottom app bar. It all depends on what you want to do on that page. If there's no controls and no commands for that page, then you don't need an app bar. You don't have to have both app bars. You can have a top app bar but not have a bottom app bar. You can have a bottom app bar but not have a top app bar. So it all depends on which kind of app you're creating. One thing that's kind of interesting is that the app bars, regardless where you swipe from the bottom edge or the top edge, they're always going to appear, both of them, if there are two app bars. So maybe you only have a top app bar, for example, and you swipe from the bottom, that top app bar will appear, even though you swipe from the bottom. Also the other way around, if you only have a bottom app bar and you swipe from the top, the bottom app bar will appear. So it doesn't really matter where you swipe from, the app bars that are available to your app will appear on screen. Now I skipped an important slide here, and more the slide of the things that you shouldn't do. There are a couple of controls that you shouldn't put in this page. For example, settings, login, logout shouldn't live there. And at first sight, it's like, wait a minute, it's kind of handy for those controls to be there. But Microsoft decided to place these in a common place in the charm bar. So users are known to find where to log in, log out, and where to share your app. So you can argue whether it's a good decision or not, but the reality is that's what users are used to. That's what they learn when they first play around with Windows 8. And the smartest way is to accept the standards and to not confuse your users by throwing in additional buttons in this app bar that shouldn't be there. Imagine you put a share button there, but on 90% of the other apps, there is no share button in app. So people are going to be confused, like, oh, why do I have that here and not in the other app? So Windows 8 is more about consistency. If you look at iOS, you can more or less do what you want. Windows 8 is more consistent, and at the end, it's better for the users. Once they learn something, they don't have to relearn how things work. So on this page, the title and the back button are in the top app bar. It happens once in a while in certain apps. And we did that because if you open the photo from the homepage, for example, you get this view. And you don't see anything. You just see your image, and you can swipe to the next image. And it's a very compelling view. I mean, you don't get disturbed by any controls or Chrome. you just see your photo. And once you need to go back or need to see the title, you swipe the app bars open and you can see the title and you can navigate back to your app. So you have to kind of trade off what is the first thing that you want your users to do. And the first thing here is you want your users to enjoy the photography and you don't want your users to like see that title and back button all the time. So this is another way how you could have solved it. That's probably the most default way, like just slam a back button there and a title. But as you can see, and it works out pretty well in this picture because you have the sky and the top. But in most pictures, it's going to overlap parts of your photo, especially if the title is really long. You don't need that. So you can move those things into the top app bar. So in the top app bar, besides navigation, a back button, you can also put a page scroller, for example, page scrubber. If you're viewing a PDF document, for example, and you want to scrub to page number 7, you can put it in the top app bar. So don't put controls or commands in the bottom app bar. In the top app bar, put them in the bottom app bar, and the top app bar, you use that for navigation. Let's have a look at the Foursquare app. So in the top, I'm zooming in here. At the top, you have three buttons. You have a home button and two other buttons to go to lists and friends. Now, you have to understand how the flow of the Foursquare app works. Most apps, you navigate into a tree. So you can, for example, go three levels deep, and then you come back up, and then you go into another category. Foursquare, it's a little bit different. Once you're in a venue detail and you see a related item, you can click from that venue detail to another venue detail. You can do that multiple times and multiple times. Imagine if you didn't have a home button in the top app bar, you had to tap 10 or 20 times in order to go back to your home page. So that's why for the Foursquare app, they placed the home button in the top app bar. Again, most apps probably don't need that because the structure is more logical and you're going to go in a category and go back out. But in some cases, for very complex apps, you can use the top app bar for some extra navigation. Now we have lists and friends here as well. These categories are not available on the homepage because on the homepage, it should be all around the venues around you. It should be about new places that are opening, top trending places. Your friends and your lists, that content is not so dynamic. You're not going to create a list every day. You're not going to have like 10 new friends every day. So why use that space on the homepage if it never is going to change? You don't necessarily need to interact with your friends on a daily basis or with those lists on a daily basis. So the only way to get to those categories is through the top app bar. And the top app bar is consistent across all the screens in Foursquare. So think what you're trying to do with your app, and think through how your sitemap is in a way. And depending on that, you can decide to use that extra navigation in the top app bar or not. So here I show what happens on the iPad. So most of the controls, like an upload button, for example, is placed in the top bar. Let's talk a little bit about share. So on iOS share, so Apple, for some reason, decided to partner with a couple of companies like Facebook and Twitter, and I think Vimeo is part of that as well, so you can, by default, share to those applications. In iOS 7, you can share from an app to app, so that's new, but Windows always embraced sharing to apps that you have installed. So for example, if you have Twitter app installed and you want to share from iCookbook to Twitter, you can do that as long as Twitter is installed. If you have Facebook installed, you can share to Facebook. So you as a developer don't need to think through which services do I have to support in order to share to. The platform or your tablet will decide that for you depending on which apps you have installed. So share, you find it in the chance bar. Click share, and then you get the share screen. Hup. Yeah, you pick the app that you want to share to. This pane that you see it right is green, although my app has red tones. And that's because the user picked this theme color. So once in a while, depending whether those panels are from the OS and not from your app, the theme color will surface. Just to compare to iOS and to iPad, the share is mostly just a button that drops down. And it's mostly limited to what a developer decided to share with. So if you would share with a Facebook app, that is not out yet. So this is also a fictive screen, by the way. But if you would share to Facebook app, Facebook would lay out this page and decide which item they can receive, for example, a photo or a text or a URL. So if you develop an app, you kind of have to think, what do I want to share? Is it multiple images? Is it copy of, combination of text? And then, of course, the shared target needs to support those fields as well. Search. Search is something that changed in 8.1, so it's hard for me to kind of explain like how to implement it or how not to do it. Search is now Bing Search. If you click on the search and the charms bar, by default you're gonna search everywhere. So you can search within your tablets, within files, but also within Bing. So that's new because in the past, if you use search, you would search within the app that you currently have opened to the left. So right now I'm in the Photos app. In 8.0, you would search in the Photo app. But in 8.1, search is not going to go to search in the app by default anymore. So that brings up a question. What do we do with search then? Where do we place search? In this app, I quickly revised that before this presentation. I placed that in the bottom app bar. So clicking the search button would open a search pane within the app where you can add additional filtering parts in your form, and you can search within the app. So before, in 8.0, search was not allowed to be on the pages. So the search button and search field should not be on your page. But in 8.1, you should. Otherwise, you can search your app. So you can either choose to put a search button in the bottom app and use a flyout, for example. You can put a search field on the page itself. There are some sessions that happened yesterday around search that you can reference on channel 9. It's a topic that needs more time than what I have here. So if your app relies heavily on search, you should check that out. Settings. Settings, you can also find these settings on the charms bar. So you open the charms bar by swiping from the right, click on settings, and you get your settings page. I show this because here, in this pane, you should place your login, logout, your account management, your privacy policy links. So don't put them in the bottom app bar. They should live in the settings page. Users know where to find these, so let's not confuse them by using other login, logout buttons throughout your app. And once you click sign in, for example, you can design your own screen. So the previous screen, again, uses that green color because the user set that theme across all their applications or across Windows 8. But once you click on the sign in, you have full control over that pane, how it looks, which fields are there, etc. Selecting items. Selecting items is also something that is different in 8.0 and 8.1. So before, in order to select an item, you would swipe select. It means you tap and select, you swipe to the bottom. And 8.1, it's just tap and hold. So in that sense, it's very similar to iOS. I think the main difference with iOS is that often on iOS, you have a button, an edit button, in the top app bar, like you can see here, that puts your content in an edit mode, and then you're going to decide which items to interact with. But Windows 8, it's about content first. So you're going to interact straight with your content. You're going to tap the photo you want to interact with. And you're not going to go into an edit mode first and then tap all the items you want to work with. So again, it's actually a little bit simpler. Instead of first like thinking, like, okay, I need to go in select mode, so I need to click this button here, and then I get in this weird mode. No, you just interact directly with the content on your page. Much easier to understand for users. So here you demonstrate that on both platforms. You just tap and hold on the tablet, on the Windows tablet at left. You do the same on iOS, but you go in and edit mode. Not always, some apps you can just tap and hold as well. You don't have to go to an edit mode. So there's no kind of real consistency in iOS around that. Let's talk a little bit about screen orientation. On iPad, there's no real guidance on how to scroll your pages. So even though you're in portrait or landscape, you as a designer and developer, you can decide what the scrolling direction is. On Windows 8, there's more consistency there, and you can still do whatever you want, but they advise you to use the horizontal scrolling, as you can see in these screens. So what happens if you turn or you flip your tablet from a landscape to a portrait mode, and you still maintain that horizontal scrolling, you get this gap here in the bottom. So what are we going to do with that gap? It's very simple. Again, we have plays on our page to surface more content. So we're going to use a little bit of more of these comments, and we're going to fill up that gap with more comments. Now, you can do much more exciting things than just showing more contents. You can show different content. You can show ads, for example, or maybe content that's not available if you're in landscape view. So by doing that, you can tell your users, if you want to do this or if you want a more detailed view, you should use the app in portrait mode. If you don't require all those extra details, just use your app in landscape mode. So you can be more creative than just placing more of the same content on your page. Multitasking. So on iPad, they kind of use the word multitasking as well, and I don't really like them using that term because you can flip from one app to another, but there's no real multitasking going on. You can never see two apps alongside each other. I was actually pretty excited that iOS 7 would introduce that, and especially for the iPad, but for some reason they didn't. Windows 8 does that really well. It's also something new in Windows 8.1. In Windows 8, you could do multitasking as well. You could have two apps alongside each other, but one of the apps would be locked to the snap view. So what you see here, that's kind of Windows 8, so look at it, but then erase it from your brain. The new way to do it is like this. So the user can now decide how much space it wants to give to the Foursquare app versus the PhotoJournal app, for example. On larger screens, you can even add a third screen, third app to your screen, and you can multitask even more across three apps. So the green bar here in the middle is a handle, and you can drag that handle to change the ratio of the split. So this is really important, actually, this snap view, or this, it's not a snap view, this is a multitasking view, because you allow your users to use your app in context of another app. So for example, if you are writing a paper, you can have a Wikipedia app at your left of the screen, and you can have Word, for example, at the right of your screen. So think through what kind of use cases your users will perform, and optimize your app for that. As you can see, your app only gets half of the screen. So if you are a text editor and you require the full size of the screen, it's not going to be a good experience. So really think that through. Which apps would my users work, or which apps would match with the app I'm developing, and how would that experience be if they both have 50% of the screen? Tiles. I think it's also very interesting that Apple didn't take the opportunity to create dynamic live tiles. So their tiles are beautifully crafted icons. But they're just resemblance. It's just a symbol. It's a symbol that resembles what you can find in that page. And that's a little bit unfortunate. On Windows 8, you're going to use your content as artwork for your tiles. So the only kind of dynamic feature you have on iPad is those little badges, as you can see here, like three, for example. If you have a new mail or something, you can increase that number. But that's kind of the extent of what you can do on the homepage of iOS. The problem is that many apps that people download, they actually never open it. It's just going to be on their home screen, and then they never just open it. They were interested in downloading it, but then they lost interest. And on iOS, you don't have an opportunity to draw those people back into your app. If your icon doesn't stand out, or if it is boring, or if that icon next to it is more appealing, then they will always glance over it. On Windows, you can use the lifestyle concept to draw people into your app. So we're all familiar with this home screen. And you know that those tiles can rotate through 5 different templates. So you have 5 times an opportunity to draw in your users into your app. I kind of look at it as A/B testing. If it doesn't work with the first tile, then maybe there's another tile that interests your users and they will click on it and dive into your app. So you have more opportunities to draw in people, so there's more chances that your app will be used. So I explained the live tiles, the rotating effect. There's also a concept called secondary tiles, which is pretty cool. This means that if you're in the app, and let's imagine you're in the Foursquare app again, and you go to a venue detail, for example, the company you work at, you can pin that to the home screen of your tablet. So you can create a second tile that will jump right into the page into your app where you want to be. So the next day you can open your tablet and you can just click the tile from your company and you can immediately check in to your company. And you can create multiple secondary tiles if you want to. So it's another kind of unique feature if you compare that to iOS. So let's quickly go to the different tiles. You have static tiles, which will probably be your logo. You have a Y tile as well. Again, a static tile that we see here on the screen. It's probably going to be your logo. But it gets more interesting if you start using the different templates. And it's not that you're going to use the tiles to just show more and more content. No, you can build a nice concept around it. For example, in case of Foursquare, in this case, I just checked in the Moscone Center, and it asked me how I like it. So it invites me to tap on the tile, open the app, and like it, or leave a tip, or add a photo. So depending on what your users do, depending on the actions they've performed on your app, or maybe outside your app, maybe on their phone, on a different platform, you can surface a lifestyle that is very, I would say, contextual. So what you see here is I swap between the little logo and the text. So at the bottom, you have opportunity to place your logo, but not all the logos lean themselves being cropped in a square. So therefore, you can also decide to use a lifestyle template that purely uses text. In this case, for example, it's just an image. It doesn't really explain too much, but it can mean different things. It's not just something that's on the homepage of the app. It could be, for example, a newly opened restaurant in a neighborhood. Or maybe it's time to eat pizza. Based on the time of the day, you show a different piece of content. Or maybe I've just been there, and instead of using text to draw me back in to rate this venue, I get a photo. So really take your time to think through the concept of your lifestyles. Again, it's not just running through some photos from your app. It's really thinking what time of the day, how can I draw in my users. This tile is kind of interesting as well. It left you see a photo of the venue, and at right, profile images have been used. So at right, the little squares are kind of tiny, so putting a photo of a venue there, it wouldn't really work. It would be really hard to kind of identify what you see in the photo, but profile images work really well. So this lifetime can mean several things as well. It can mean that 4 of your friends are in this venue. You're going to be like, oh, I'm not there. Let's see what's going on. Or it could be that you just checked in there and you checked in with those friends. So again, just be really creative and take your time to come up with a cool concept. Just a different template. Yet another template. So you have to choose from the templates that are available. So you cannot change, for example, the font size or the ratio between the photo and the blue bar. So you have to choose from the templates and put your content in there. This tile is based around one metric. And again, I use Foursquare as an example here. You recently checked in, you scored some points, so bam, that shows on the homepage. And then finally, kind of show you how a secondary tile would look like. So the secondary tile, the bar Sagor. It's a new bar, just opened in Seattle. If that's my favorite place to go, I can pin that to the homepage, and then you have 2 Foursquare tiles, or maybe 3 or more. Now in 8.1, and you probably all know that by now, we have a couple of new tiles, smaller ones, as you can see here, and then a wide one as well. You don't have to design and develop against that. You can decide not to offer a larger tile. But again, you can lose an opportunity if your user really likes your app, then you want to give them an opportunity to take up more screen estate. These are the templates that you can choose from. And there will be more, of course, based on the larger and the smaller tiles. Let's talk a little bit about notifications. On iOS, a push notification comes up as a pop-up window. And on Windows 8, it comes up as a toast notification. And that's how it looks like. So on iOS, the only way to do some kind of something dynamic to draw in people into your app is by using push notifications, because the iconography is not dynamic. On Windows 8, you should use this much less than on iPad or on iOS, because these are very intrusive. So wherever app you are, this toast notification from your app can suddenly surface and distract you. So we want to use this as least as possible. If you take, for example, Foursquare as an example, you would think, oh, let's just show a toast notification every time a friend checks in. But just imagine you're making your presentation for a big business meeting, and every minute there's this toast notification that shows up. That's pretty intrusive. That's not what you should use it for. Use it for very critical alerts. Maybe you have a calendar app and you have to go to this meeting. Maybe you're developing a doctor's app and a patient needs attention. That's what we use it for. But because you have live tiles, you're going to use those toast notifications less. So think through how important that message is and whether you want to show it to toast notifications or to a live tile. Toast notifications are gone really quickly. So even though they alert you to do something, once you missed it, it's gone. While live tiles, you can keep it on the screen for a longer time. So this kind of concludes the iOS to Windows 8 translation case study. And now I'm going to run through a couple of screens, a couple of designs. That's actually the most fun part of the presentation. And I'll show you how you can be creative in designing in Windows 8 app. So you can find a lot of inspiration online as well. So windowsstore.com/designers. Click on Getting Inspired, and then click on one of those many case studies. Let's start with Nature Space. I referenced it already this morning, or in the beginning of the presentation. Nature Space is a small company based out of Chicago, 2 guys, and they go into the woods with their mics, and they record sounds. Could be thunderstorm, could be a little waterfall, could be birds. And this app is all around sounds. So if you want to fall asleep with some rain, well, Seattle, that's by default there already, but you could just open this app and enjoy and get relaxed. And this is the homepage. And you immediately see, like, where are the tiles? Where are the squares? Because everybody thinks that Windows 8 is equal to squares or rectangles, but it's not. This is totally up to par to the design guidelines. It's content before Chrome. I don't see any Chrome. It's fast and fluid, which is a lot of content here as well. And it's authentically digital as well. So perfect design, nothing wrong with that. But designers are a little bit stuck, and it's probably because the design guidelines are in a way strict, but there are other ways you have to know where you can innovate, what you can do, how you can derive from it and still staying true to the design language. So within those hubs, so every circle is a hub. Within the hubs, you see 3 items that you can tap and go to. You see the hub title that are tappable. You see a little indicator here, 7, and I believe that's 9. That shows you that there's more content than what you see on the screen. I would say not use circles because it has been done, though, but just be creative in which kind of shapes you use. This shape, a circle, is very simple. It's kind of related to a square. kind of brothers and sisters. So keep it, again, keep it simple. It's not because you can go crazy that you should start creating really complex designs. I think this is easy for the eye and for the user. City Power and Light is a fashion e-commerce app. So if you see, look at this homepage, again, you see kind of squares in there with a little bit scoot, and that creates this kind of unique effect. And this app also has a very compelling concept. So you see the top, these are all images from the same person. So the image has been cut up and laid out next to each other. And the concept is that you start browsing in categories that start with your head, around your waist, around your legs. So as you scroll to the right of the panorama, you get into sections on your body. So the last part of your panorama would probably be your shoes. Now, this is a large panorama. There's a lot of items there. So we designed a semantic zoom. And again, a semantic zoom, no squares, no tiles. And the concept was navigating through different parts of the body. And that's what you can perfectly do here. You see one person, and you can just tap on his head, on his shoulder, on his legs to dive into to that category. So you can be really creative. Don't limit yourself. Think out of the square, I would say. Don't limit yourself and what you can do in terms of design. The background has a logo here, for example. It's very subtle. It doesn't overwhelm people. It's there. Let's look at Wintips. This is a travel airline search engine kind of app. So you can find deals and see where you want to go on vacation. And in this screen, I show you a state where the top and the bottom apps bars are open. And you kind of see three app bars here. But in reality, we only have two app bars. We have the top app bar and the bottom app bar. The unique implementation here is that the bottom app bar is designed in that way that you see two separate app bars. Because at the right, we have the global commands, and at left, you have the contextual commands. So there was a lot of space here in the middle that wasn't being used, so why even show an overlay that just you can overlay your content if you can just split it? Now, this might be a tiny little bit confusing for users that are not really familiar with Windows 8 that well, because that might think if you swipe from here, only this app bar is going to open, and if you swipe from the right, only this app bar is going to open. But they're both going to appear. So it's not that they're independent. So just look at it as two app bars with a cutout here. And the shape is actually derived from the shape of a wing of a plane. That's where it comes from. Let's look at NASDAQ, Director's Desk. This is a board of directors app. So those people are really busy and need to sign a lot of documents and exchange documents, give comments on decisions. Using this app, they can do all that. But the content of the app is, you know, it's business. It's a little bit boring. I'm a designer, right? So I want to see like pretty pictures and stuff. So there was only some meetings to work with and some photos of context here. And I tried to do something unique with those square tiles. And I derived this kind of element here from the graphs that you see that those business people use. So what you see here, I call it kind of the iceberg technique. You see that the end of this tile has this kind of transparency and this kind of graph look. Also in the background, you see the graph going like this. So the photos are still square, but all the rest is a little bit different. So this shows that you can really create something that is unique to your brand. Parents, the cool thing about parents here is that the tiles overlap a little bit. So here I didn't respect the 10 pixels between the content. You don't have to. I mean, it works perfectly. There's a little chalk effect around here, so it's a little bit skeuomorphic if you want to, but it's still very subtle. But the fun part about this app is that as you scroll to the right and as you go to the different phases of pregnancy, you'll see this little lady here. This graphic is going to change as well. So now she has two kids, but at some point she will have a stroller or look pregnant. So these are kind of subtle things that you can do with design. Within the guidelines, but not like distracting your users too much. Comic Director is a comic app. So you can pull in photos, clip arts, make your own comic. The fun part about this app is the app bar again. So now we have a full app bar that expands the full width, but we still make the distinguishing between local commands and global commands. So you have the global one, you have the local ones. The top app bar is just this little triangle here. It was not necessary to expand it to the full width of the screen because we would overlap our title and our comic. So the little triangle at the left is enough to indicate users that you can go back. And finally, Wingtip Golf has an interesting app bar as well. Instead of like a straight line in the bottom, it references to the, you know, the fields in a golf court. So if you have more questions or if you want to learn about Windows 8 design in a more visual way, Ratio Interactive made this website called windows8designhandbook.com. And the concept we use there is the do's and don'ts. So you can, every topic has do's and don'ts, so you can see how not to do it and learn from that. It's a little bit different, a different take than how Microsoft develops their content. It's a more visual way, much more fun for designers. So thank you for listening to me, and I hope I inspired you creating excellent, good-looking, unique apps. And if you have more questions, I'm here for you.